This is the United States Eventing Association's official podcast. Hello and welcome to the program. I'm Chris Stafford. On the show this week, we continue our series of 2015 Hall of Fame inductees as the USEA president, Diane Pitts, reflects on the career of Mike Huber and his contribution to the sport. But first, we hear from Samantha Allen, who, alongside Faith Fessenden, judged the USEA Future Event Horse West Coast Championship presented by Prefoot at Woodside Park in Northern California last week. The champion was the 3-year-old thoroughbred Holsteiner gelding Cheers, owned and bred by Terry and Linda Payne. I caught up with Samantha as she arrived in Maryland for the East Coast Championship this week, which she'll be judging alongside Robin Walker and Peter Gray. But first, I asked her about the West Coast Championship. Let's talk about the horses that were presented there, Samantha.
I think we had some lovely young horses. I think the quality seems to be improving through the years, and I'm excited to see where they go in the next few years.
Well, you had 13 yearlings, didn't you, and 2-year-olds and 3-year-olds. Give us an idea of what you were looking at with those.
Well, you know, one of the first things you look at are the type. You know, when you look at the score sheet, you want to see that they show some appearance of refining blood. We move on to the frame. We want to see smooth connections. We want to see a strong connection behind. Legs and feet, we're looking at their hooves, general conformation and angulations. Then we watch them walk on the triangle. We watch them trot. And we're looking at the quality of the gates there.
And what are you seeing that is improving now with this program over time?
I think people are getting a better idea for the type that we're looking for. And also the walks are getting better. So I think we're seeing more freedom. They're learning how to show them a little bit better as well in hand. But just overall, the general type is looking more of an event type.
And do you get an idea of where these horses are coming from in terms of their breeding and where they're bred?
You know, I don't really look at that so much. I like to look at the horse in front of me. We kind of look at that after the championship.
Right. That's a very good point. So what did you take away personally then when you looked at where these horses have been bred now? I mean, looking at the evolution of this program.
Mm-hmm. Well, we're seeing some more thoroughbred coming into the bloodlines in general. And so we're seeing a little more refinement coming through.
When you say refinement, break that down a little bit for us, Samantha, in how it's presented.
Well, when we look at the horses, we're looking at horses that in development with their age are not looking so with so much. We want to see bone, but we don't want to see heavy-boned horses. We want to see something that looks athletic, aerodynamic, something that looks like it can cover ground and gallop across the field.
So the athleticism and a little bit more thoroughbred-y maybe. I mean, do you get an idea of the breeding of these horses too? Because, you know, at that young age, I think a lot of people can learn from this, you know, what bloodlines they should be maybe pursuing.
They do list it in the program. The sire and the dam, at least, and you can go look them up and find out how much they're over of blood. The grand champion, actually, I think I read, was half Holsteiner and half thoroughbred. And he actually had more of a thoroughbred-type look to him when he walked in the ring.
And he has a well-known relative, doesn't he?
Yes, I read in the article that he was related to Gin and Juice, so that's pretty exciting to have seen that.
Yes, of course, that's the Canadian rider, Holly Bennett-Awad, who has partnered Gin and Juice for a number of years successfully on the Canadian team. And it is interesting, isn't it, when these relatives come out, these young relatives of these top horses, they really turn your eye then. I think it just actually gets a little bit more attention, doesn't it, when you find out maybe after the fact that who their relatives are.
Yeah, I actually thought that was pretty exciting when I read the, you know, the article, and I didn't realize that at first. I thought, well, you know, the bloodlines do come through.
They certainly do, exactly. Well, in terms of the competition itself there, then what would you say were the most impressive aspects of that? Then you say there's a little bit more refinement now and looking at the entries that you had this year and what your biggest takeaways were from that.
I feel like definitely we're seeing that people are breeding more of the types that we're looking for. And I think that's going to continue to improve as they realize what it is that we're looking for. Again, we saw some really good walks. I'd like to see the trucks improve a little bit as the years come, since, you know, those can be built on later through training. But I think that overall as well, the horses were pretty well behaved too. They were very well handled. Most of them were excellent for their owners. And I really was, amazed. A lot of my comments in the bottom score was behaviors that relates to performance. I thought that a lot of them, the temperament seemed to be very good.
And that's obviously coming through with handling as well. And I noticed the leading horse there, the winner, the gelding, Cheers, was bred and owned by Terry and Linda Payne. So obviously they've got a system going, and a lot of people are finding that they need a system, as you say, of good handling, finding the right temperament to produce the horses we need in the sport.
Yeah, I think the sport requires a lot of the horses to have to go through all three phases, and I think temperament is a huge aspect.
Certainly. Well, this, of course, is the eighth year. The Future Event Horse Program was started, the series was started in 2007, and you're coming to the East Coast Championships this week. Last week you were judging with Faith Fessenden. Tell us about this weekend and what you're looking forward to, where it will be, and who will be judging with you.
This weekend it looks like we have the possibility of judging 47 to 48 horses. I'll be judging in hand with Robin Walker, and we're at Maryland Horse Trials at Lochmoy Farm. The other exciting thing about this weekend is that the introduction of the demonstration class of the jump chute for the three-year-olds. Right now, it looks like we have about 14 planning to do the jump chute. A little bit of it depends. There's a qualifier the day before, so if all of them qualify, that's the numbers we're looking at.
Explain about the jump chute, because we've talked about it on the show in months past, but just refresh everybody's mind of, you know, how this came about and what the purpose of this is, what you'll be looking for.
Okay, so the jump chute came about that we really felt like to evaluate an upper level event horse at this age, we needed to see them canter and jump. We didn't want to do it earlier than the age of three. And so there has been a pen that's been constructed that will be used. It's very safe. I believe it's 7 feet tall. It'll be put on good footing, and the horses will come in. They'll be allowed 10 minutes. They'll do a little bit of canter. As a warm-up, they're going to be judged by the judges, which will be Robin and Peter Gray for the jump shoot. They're going to be judged on rhythm, balance, and ground cover. And then we're going to set up a jumping gymnastic. There's a range of distances, but it's basically a placement pole, 9 feet to a fence, a range, but we're going to start at 18 feet to another vertical, and then 21 feet to an ascending oxer. And that range is, I can't remember the exact numbers of the range, but it's quite a large range to accommodate scopey horses or smaller horses. We really want to see what's best for them. They'll be allowed to go through a total of four times. The maximum height of the oxer is 3'6".
3'6".
Correct. They don't necessarily have to do 3'6". They're going to be working with the owners on that, but that's the maximum height.
And what are you hoping you'll find with these horses using this? Because it's a system I believe that Robin himself has really introduced into the U.S. system, isn't he?
Yeah, he's a big proponent of it. And, you know, he and I sort of have worked together on how to go about introducing it and that sort of thing. you know, what we're hoping to see is, in order for an event horse to continue on, they really need to have a good canter, and they need to be able to jump. And we're hoping to see some young athletes, some promising athletes, that can show us some scope and ability.
Now, hopefully the future stars for the sport.
I hope so. I'm looking forward to following them through their careers.
And what time does this all get underway? And remind us again of the dates, the venue, and the schedule for each day, Samantha, in case anyone would like to go along if they're local.
I'm not sure on the Wednesday schedule. I believe it starts at 8 or 9 with the in hand, and I'm not sure of the practice yet. I think it's in the afternoon. But on Thursday at the championships, they're starting in hand in the morning at 8. And then I believe the jump shoot starts around 2 and will go till about 5 or 5:15.
Okay, so very full day and lots of young horses to be presented to you during that time. And then, of course, we'll have the both championships, both champions anointed from the West Coast and the East Coast for this year's USEA Future Event Horse.
Yes, and the jump shoot demonstration is a separate class this year. It's its own thing. The grand champion will be an in-hand thing like we did on the West Coast.
Okay, that's good to know. And we should thank our sponsors, Prevert, for supporting this program. Samantha, thank you very much indeed for coming on the program this week and telling us about that. And good luck with this week's competition.
Thank you very much.
And you can find the full results from the West Coast Championship on the website at useventing.com and information about the East Coast Championships this week. And now we continue our series on the 2015 USEA Hall of Fame inductees as the USEA President Diane Pitts joins me now to reflect on the career of Mike Huber and his contribution to the sport in so many roles. Mike represented the U.S. at the 1978 World Championships at the age of 18, the first of many accomplishments in his storied career. He won the individual and team gold aboard Quartermaster at the 1987 Pan American Games and also rode for the U.S. at the 1990 and 1994 World Equestrian Games. He served on the USEA Board of Governors starting in 1989 and became the youngest president of the organization in 1993. He chairs the USEF Eventing High Performance Committee and also sits on the USEF Eventing Technical Committee, as well as being a much-loved coach and trainer in Area 5. Diane, welcome back to the program.
Thank you. It's wonderful to be here. Thanks for having me, Chris.
Well, as you say, we are continuing this series of the inductees, going through all of them as we lead up to this year's annual convention. And Mike Huber is someone whom you've known for quite a while, isn't he?
I have. I've known probably not as long as many people in the sport, but I have known Mike since the late 90s. I actually met him in a rather humorous way. We were at an old competition called Cedarwood, which was down in the Waco area, and it was my son's first competition, and Mike was there, and he probably had the only other male rider at the competition, and his young male student had forgotten his tie. So Mike had to borrow my son's tie for his rider for dressage. So that's actually how we met, which was kind of an unusual way to meet him. But I had heard so much about Mike when Steven started eventing. I mean, Mike in Area 5 was the one name that everybody knew and that everybody heard about, because he was kind of our one four-star rider at that time, other than, you know, Mary Darcy or something like that. So it was a name that you heard a lot, and it was interesting to meet him.
Well, before we talk about his contribution as a coach and, of course, involved in the administration of the sport, Diane, let's look a little bit further back at his riding career.
Okay. And what I know about Mike's riding career, I've mostly read because I was not involved in the sport at that time. But I understand that he still owns a few records, like the youngest rider at at the time at the World Equestrian Games, and the youngest horse, and I believe the youngest horse won't be broken because they've changed the age for the horse, but I know Mike represented the team or was on the team at the age of 18.
Yes, that would be the 1978 World Championships. Yes. He was a member there, of course, and at the 1980 Olympic Games.
Yes. It's a storied career. I know he was a gold medalist at the Pan Am Games and led the team to gold, and has the long hours we've spent traveling back and forth to Kentucky for young riders. I've heard a lot of it about his career, but I know he competed under several different coaches and for several years. And he's an amazing asset to have in Area 5, because, you know, that type of experience you just, not many people have.
Well, of course, he brings that experience to his coaching, and the young riders benefit enormously. Of course, he's been very involved with the young riders for a number of years now. So that is probably another area where you're closely associated with him today, isn't it?
Right. And that's really where I got to know Mike quite a bit. He's coached Area 5 for, I believe, 18 years and has a remarkable record as far as medals won, both individual and team. But I met him, my son rode for Area 5 in 2005, and Mike was there. And it's interesting because Mike, there were a lot of other trainers in the area that thought maybe we should pass this around, maybe we should have other coaches, you know, why should Mike always coach this type of issue? But when the year that Stephen went, it was in Virginia, and Brian Penny were the organizers, and our area had 16 riders because it was the long format was a non-championship division, but we sent four riders to that, and then we sent six to the one-star and six to the two-star under the new format. So he coached 16 riders, we had 16 grooms, we had at least 16 sets of parents, because a lot of kids came with multiples, and it was the most professional job I've ever seen done. He was incredibly even-handed, generous with his time to everybody. Didn't matter whether you were one of his riders or whether you came with, you know, you'd been trained in another program. And I became a fan. I became a big fan after that. And I called our area chair and I said, you know what? My son never rode with him, but if anybody wants to disparage him, send him to me, because I was so incredibly impressed with the job he did. And that's where I first got to know Mike. I took over as our young rider coordinator for Area 5 in 2009, I believe it was my first year of going. And that's really where we started to become very good friends. I was the young rider coordinator here until I became president of the USEA. So the nice thing about it was my son was too old for the program by then. So I was just doing it because I think a lot of the program, but you spend a lot of time with each other traveling, because Mike would haul the horses, so off we'd go in his rig to Kentucky, because it had moved to Kentucky. That was first year it moved to Kentucky. So 15 hours in a truck riding with somebody, you get to know them quite well, and that's really where we became good friends.
Well, of course, he has made an enormous contribution to the administration of the sport, not least of all as president. He's been on the board of governors here at the USEA. Talk a little bit about his contribution, Diane, in that aspect.
You know, Mike is one of those remarkable personalities, and we're fortunate to have a few of them in the sport that stay involved in a very positive way. He's been a member. He's, as you said, he's been president of the USEA. He's been involved. He currently heads our competitions committee, so he's still deeply involved in the sport. In that way, he gives very generously of his time. He's on the eventing technical committee. He was head of the high performance committee. He was head selector for the U.S. team for a number of years. So he's always, I mean, anytime I'm stuck or I need you know, I just need to bounce something off of somebody that's got a lot more experience in the whole history with the sport. I go to Joe or I go to Mike, and they're there, and they still give. He still stays on the Area 5 council. He even stepped in for, we had our chair resigned. He stepped in for a year to do that, and that was only a couple of years ago. So he stays deeply involved in a very positive way with the sport. And he grows with the sport. He sees how the sport changes. He's willing to accept change, but he doesn't take you. He's not somebody you sit around and say, well, back in the day, all the time. He appreciates the sport. He knows where it's going. And he's just a very positive input into where things are going. And he's got pretty damn good judgment, too, I think.
So if you were to sum him up and, you know, what he's brought to the sport of eventing as a rider, a coach, an administrator, a selector, so many different hats that Mike has worn over the years. How would you summarize him, Diane?
Dedicated, positive. His commitment to the youth of this sport is extraordinary. He still is involved. He's a selector for our under 18 and under 25 programs. And he's just, you know, he's a go-to guy. He is absolutely a go-to guy. He is willing to do whatever somebody asks of him. Doesn't complain about being overused. I mean, he's like I said, he's one of a handful of people that have been in the sport for a very, very, very long time who love the sport and are willing to roll up their sleeves and make things work.
And I'm sure there'll be lots of stories told at convention during during that
I think there will
ceremony.
Be.
Absolutely. Yeah. Well, wonderful. Well, thank you so much for coming on the program, Diane, and sharing your reflections on Mike Huber. Thank you so much.
My pleasure. Thanks, Chris.
And don't forget to check the website at useventing.com for registration and information about this year's annual convention, where we will be celebrating the inductees. The convention takes place at the Omni Shoreham Hotel and Resort in Washington, D.C. from the 2nd through the 6th of December. As always, you can listen to this podcast on the go by downloading it from the iTunes podcast store to any podcast app. That's it for this week's program. Don't forget you can keep up with all our news and updates via social media, Facebook and Twitter, as well as on the website. Until next week, thank you for listening wherever you are in the world, and enjoy your eventing.